why would we bother doing a podcast?
I don't know.
Yeah, we think about that a lot.
That would just be a print artist?
Better. Leave a comment that's hashtag this is awkward.
Letting
people be creative.
Yeah. Right. And that's really, I mean, that's part of me too, right? It's all of us, right? We're all creative people and we like to have that kind of creative expression. And that's kind of, that also influences my writing style in a way where I like the big two page splash pages and things like that. I like good action sequences, but again, it's got to work within that context, you know? There's a reason they film action sequences a certain way, you know, because they work well. Mm-hmm. And I definitely have given, you know, my artists pretty much, you know, you do what you need to do. And since I'm doing the lettering myself and editing it, you know, I'm able to kind of leak some of those word balloons or dialogue onto other panels if need be, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. I think that's one of the bad things too, is like, I know we haven't really come across it much, but I know, just seeing drama and messages and comments and artists versus writers nonsense, just so aggravating. But it's, the biggest problem is the fact that it's like everybody forgets that it's fun. It should be fun. Like being creative is fun. Like, and when I feel like so many artists are just trying to do it, they want to do it full time, but they can't.
Right.
But they're trying to push that so hard and so fast to get to being a professional artist and making a living and never having to work any other job, that they don't care about they're not doing it with you. They're doing it for money. And when you're doing it just straight for money, you know, like you could tell when you hire an artist and they care about it and they're, hey man, what about this? Oh, cool. Hey, what if we do this? This would be really awesome. Mm-hmm. You know, like that's the kind of like give and take you want with other creative people. And that just makes you want to do it more and you push more and like just having that back and forth. So
I've completely altered the way that I talk to other creatives and in messages and such, because I mean, Todd and Matt, you know, we're all friends with a whole bunch of people that we've never spoken to before. And, you know, I had put some feelers out for something that I had in my mind, and an artist reached out, and I kind of gave a quick little, I don't know what the right way to say it is. It's not like an ultimatum, but like, but I was very honest and very upfront. And I told them, I want to work with an artist that, is beyond the scope of just, I need money to do your book. Like the payment thing has to happen anyway, regardless. And I understand
that. Right.
But if I can't find an artist that actually cares about the work, it's not going to matter. And especially when we're starting to get into things that we want to pitch to larger publishers, from the people that we've met, it seems so much more apparent and effective when you have a team that cares about the book rather than a bunch of random people that worked on a book together. And so now these people that are taking these pitches, that is part of what they're looking at. They want to know how your team works together, not just efficiency wise, but like what's the relationship wise. And I made the general statement to that person and they were like, well, you know what? You want to jump on a video call and you just have to excuse my accent. They were from Italy and they said they sounded like Mario. And and I was like, let's
do it.
And so I
just let's go.
Yeah, we talked for 45 minutes. We learned a whole lot of stuff about each other. We learned a whole lot of stuff about our creative pasts. We talked lightly about where we both fell on different sides of religion and like just all kinds of life stuff. And by the end of the conversation, we're both like, well, that felt pretty good. Maybe we'll work together some days. And then we both moved on with our day.
Interesting. Yeah. That's an interesting side of it that, you know, honestly, I've never experienced. I kind of got on social media in the get-go just to be connected with other artists, right? To be influenced, to just have, I mean, I never thought of it necessarily as what it is now. It's like this doorway into this person and you can message them if they message you back or not, but you have that availability just to reach out to like Jim Lee, you know what I mean? Or like these hugely influential artists and writers and creators out there. I didn't do that. Like, I got on just to stay in contact with friends and family and to be inspired by art and writers to keep my creative stuff going. And yeah. I've really made sure that over the years it's stayed that way. You know, I mean, I've had to block people. Yeah. I've had really terrible kind of social engagements, but at the end of the day, like, okay, so they're not part of my life anymore. Nothing lost, but nope. You know, it's interesting that for at least Annabelle, I had the original colorist who all my artists are in South America. And, you know, they all speak pretty good English, which is good, but I mean, mm-hmm. they probably speak five languages down there. Cause I mean, I'm like the quintessential white boy and I speak one language.
Right.
But, you know, he had to kind of leave the project because he just got too busy. And, you know, so he pretty much colored all the pages. I needed some edits done. So I had to reach out and look for another colorist. 2 weeks ago, I think it was, and finally nailed down a colorist that's going to pick up the rest of the book and stay somewhat similar to his style. Because I really liked it, you know, and I hate mm-hmm. to ask people like, hey, can you mimic this style? Because I've had people ask me that. And I'm just like, it's kind of a slap in the face. Like, this is how I draw. This is how I color.
Right.
You know, I can go that way if I need to. But at the end of the day, like, if you like,
it's not natural.
Yeah, right. It's what I do. And I mean, I had a lot of recent engagements with artists and I've never got that vibe from them, you know, where it was just like, I'm doing it for money. And, you know, a lot of them sent me portfolios. A lot of them, you know, some of them were willing to do like a sample panel just to see how the styles matched, you know, and mm-hmm. they were flexible and they got paid. But at the end of the day, like, I that's an interesting perspective, you know,
yeah.
to have that.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's just, oh, go ahead.
It's mostly because the way that I don't know what the right. Oh, we'll save some of this for, I guess, when Matt and I do the 100th episode and we actually talk about everything that's been going on. But Matt and I both like kind of smashed reset buttons at the end of 2021, and yeah. And so like Matt's in the tattoo world again, and that's what he's working on. That's you know, where a lot of his work is now. Yeah, yeah. This is full time. And for me, it's been so much more editing. I've been on the editing side of stuff a lot more lately. And then just writing stuff that's not comic books, short stories and like the blog posts that I've been doing and all that kind of weird stuff. But we had those issues with artists, and we've been friends with people who have had really bad issues with artists. And we also know writers that are pretty awful. they're definitely out there. The unfortunate thing is, on a lot of the pages, when you go on them, if somebody posts, you know, if a writer posts looking for an artist, just scroll through the comments and, you know, you probably see some sort of argument break out. And I think it's because there's not a lot of respect, for each other's process. Everybody wants to get paid. And I think what I'm noticing is it feels like writers like myself, I'm guilty of it, want more of that relationship. They want to feel like they have a partner with the artist. And then artists, you know, a lot of them, you'll find ones that want to have that partnership, but for the most part, they're like, well, you know, I've worked with a lot of writers that have only done one book and then disappeared. So, you know, that's pretty much how they look at books now, is, you know, one off and then that creator kind of disappears. And that happens a lot. And we've talked about it a lot on the show. There are probably a lot of really, really good series that we'll never get to read because people gave up after one issue that didn't do as well as they thought it would on Kickstarter. So anyone that's done multiple, you know, issues of a series, I think that is something that should be celebrated, because it doesn't happen a lot anymore.
Yeah, no, you bring up a great point, Aaron. I mean, it's going through the recent talking with all these artists and kind of trying to find a colorist that, you know, you do deal with people from other countries. I mean, it's a mm-hmm. global thing now. Mm-hmm. And, you know, yeah, there's always this, sometimes a language barrier, or there could be barriers. But, you know, I think the comic industry sometimes gets a terrible rap. Like, it's just the worst rap of industries. And, you know, I just thinking about it, it's like, you know, we as the creators, we can make this industry as great as it can be or as terrible as it is. You know what I mean? We have the freedom and the choice to make it better. And So I try to do that, you know, in my personal life, and even it just leaks into being at shows and being a creator. Like, I like to communicate with people. If I see something kind of like out of place, like, hey, can we adjust this panel? You know, maybe it needs to have a second character in it. Okay, can we redo that? And I've found that, you know, being nice just tends to really get results in a way. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's unfortunate that that's kind of how it is. And you're right, 100% right. I've worked on projects that they did one book and that was it, and they're done, you know? And I'm like, that was really good, you know?
Yeah, or you see the potential, yeah.
Yeah.
I think the biggest part, you know, as an artist and having done it and knowing, you know, the same, doing everything yourself.
Yeah.
And you know how much work it takes. The thing is like when artists come in and they have all these high demands because they know they're good, but they have never done a book.
Mm-hmm.
You kind of have to, like, you already know where it's going to go because like, you know, it's either they have really good samples because they spent so much time on it and they don't realize how fast you need the book. Or how fast you eventually want the book to come out.
Right.
And then once they realize they're not at that level and they were really cocky and they expected this much money, and it's like, once you finally expect the work, then they drop off and out of nowhere, they're gone.
Yeah.
And now you got half a book, you know, like, and that's the biggest problem.
Or the flip side of it is you get a really good artist that gets picked up by Marvel and DC when they only did one or two issues of your, you know, eight issue series or whatever. Right. And then they're gone. So now you have to find another artist.
Yeah.
And that's exactly why, I mean, I've had that happen. I've had artists ghost on me for writing books and, you know, working with one of the writers that I ended up doing some work for probably 10, 12 years ago. You know, we're kind of thinking about it and we're like, should we just get artists on these books and finish these stories? Like, there's still value in the stories. And, you know, 10, 12 years ago, crowdfunding was not what it is now.
Right.
You know, and for me, like, the reason I've continued to do this, I mean, now I'm taking more on a financial burden as far as like paying for all the art. But for me, it's still one of those things, like, it's a hobby for me. People spend money on their hobbies for all kinds of things. You know, they spend thousands of dollars on having a souped up car or a gaming PC or, you know, all kinds of stuff, right? Mm-hmm. My hobby is comics. My hobby is making comics. So if I go a little in the red on an issue and the Kickstarter only does a little bit, and it's less than what it cost me, okay, that's just money I spent on my hobby. And that's how I look at it. And I'm selfish in that regard where I just want my books made. I just want the stories out there. Like, if people, I'm doing what I can to make sure that retailers can pick them up. If anybody wants retail, they got barcodes and going through all that side of it. And that's it. You know, hey, they're here if you want to read them. And if not, that's cool too. You know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think you have the right attitude.
Yes.
Right. Thanks. And it's one of those, that's exactly how it should be, because that's the other problem I always had. See, when me and Aaron both started, it was the same thing. It was like, I'm still working a full-time job. Yeah. You're still working a full-time job. We just want to make comics and have fun.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, like, it's, we don't expect it to, I mean, sure, it'd be great if we could, you know, I'm doing art full-time in a different medium.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Well, comics is not paying. It's okay. It's still like, I still want to do it and still have fun with it, you know, and write cool and draw cool stories. Other artists, however, they want to jump right in from the Kubert School and charge you Gray Capullo prizes. And it's like, no. Like, it's like, no, you don't have that clout. There's no way. You're not seasoned, you know? And it's just like, it's, go work a normal job, do it, build yourself up, you know? Like, I know the other bad part with artists, and like, I know I could probably get a lot of flack for this, but this is how, I mean, even in the tattoo industry, right? So many famous tattoo artists, I always, like, they said, you know what, you know, you charge what you can. And, you know, like, people will come in and get the normal stuff they see off the internet, the Pinterest tattoos, little things. That's the bread and butter. You know, if you want to build a name for yourself and do your own original artwork, you do a lot of it for free. And you do it on the weekends, on your days off, and you go in there and you build up your portfolio. And I know one artist, he said, I used to go in once a week, and do something I wanted to do for free so I can post it up. And then everybody started coming in for it. Everybody wanted what I was doing. They saw what I could do. I built up my stuff like that. You know, it's just like, you're still doing, that would still be the same thing as like, charging a lot less just to help get your name into a book. So you guys could have a book and still work a full-time job, do the stuff that pays the bills. Every time you get a, you know, do a panel a night, not even a full page, just do one panel, you know, get a 5-page story out in something. So you have your name on something, you know, like, and I feel like that's lost. I feel like that's lost in a lot of people.
It definitely is. I mean, that's how I did Ice Pack. You know, I just did it when I could, you know, I never want to lose the joy of being creative. And, you know, I love my day job. I would not trade that for pretty much anything. I mean, you know, 7 figures, maybe, but I don't think that's happening anytime soon, you know?
Right.
So this is just a nice creative outlet. And I write fun stories. I like telling just over the top kind of ridiculous things. You touched on research, like research for storytelling is so important. And I probably spend more time researching stuff than actually writing the script. You know, you want to get as much information because you're going to have these fans that'll be like, oh wait, but that one little thing didn't line up with this thing. And you're like, all right, yeah, I didn't see that, you know? So
then they catch them hands.
Yeah.
I've been lightly working off and on this, just a weird, weird twist on Arthurian legend stuff. And that's nerve wracking as crap, because that's literally my thought the whole time I'm working on it is, well, people are going to pick this thing apart to like every little fiber of its being. But then at some point you're like, well, you know what? Some stuff has to change for the story I'm trying to tell. So let's call them.
I think for me, it'd be more like, I'm just glad they read it so they could pick it apart. That means they read it.
Matt and I like to tell the story about Tilt, because Tilt is just an over the top superhero. He's, you know, he's like Superman that was homeless. And there's a scene where he's sitting on a plane wing eating a sandwich out of his, you know, brown paper bag, but he's just eating a sandwich. And this dude came up to us.
The first comic.
First panel of issue one. And this dude comes up and he's like, he opens up the book. He's wearing a lot My Little Pony shirt. I should start there. In our age group. And he opens up the book for a minute and he just sets it back down. And he was like, man, all that stuff would fly out of that sandwich if he was sitting there on a plane wing eating it. And we were just, neither of us knew what to say. And I was just like, so you lost belief in the book. It's not that a person flew and sat on the plane wing, but it's that he's eating a sandwich on a plane wing. That's where you draw the line. So, I mean, at the end of the day, we're making comic books. Like, there's a little bit of suspension of belief, I think. If he wants to eat a sandwich on a plane wing, let's let him eat a sandwich. Maybe it had molasses and it was holding it down. I don't know. Put something in your head. You can figure it out.
I mean, the physics of actually being on a plane wing, eating a sandwich, I mean, if you're holding it the right way, it's going to be fine. You know, you just got to know how to hold the sandwich.
If you're close enough to the tube, the main part of the aircraft, the wind's not even hitting over there. So,
And you're right. I kind of just want people to read it. So, I mean, have fun picking it apart.
Yeah.
But yeah, there's a lot of bad Arthurian stuff out there, like films and entertainment. There's a lot of bad stuff. And that's one of my favorite things. I love King Arthur stories. Like,
same.
Yeah. Excalibur, dude. 1981.
Yeah.
82. 81-82.
It's going to be great.
It's cheesy, but it's a good movie.
I think though, even after all the bad stuff we say, or not, it's not even bad. It's just critiques and all the stuff we complain about. It's just enjoy being creative. Like you just said, there's always bad stuff out there, and those bad stuff, you know, everybody's got to make the bad stuff to get to something good eventually. So,
we talked a lot about artists because you guys are both artists, but like on the writing side of it, I know way too many writers that are just ultra demanding for stuff that they shouldn't be demanding for. It's difficult. I understand it as a writer. You know, for Tilt issues 1-4, it took, I don't know, like 4 years to get all 4 of those out, but they had been written years ago. So as a writer, patience is kind of the name of the game. And that's why I write other stuff, like short stories and all that. That's my outlet. That's while I'm waiting on stuff to get done, I might as well put that energy somewhere else rather than hassling an artist. So that was my letter to writers, is chill, work on something else.
Yeah.
What do you want out of all this, Todd? Out of all your endeavors, what do you want out of all of it?
I want to be rich and famous, right? Isn't that, I want to go to Disneyland. I mean, come on.
I mean, you can go. Actually, it's not that expensive. I mean, it is now, but I mean.
They opened up the Mario World in Universal, and as soon as my wife saw that, I was like, oh, what? Crap.
Yeah. Oh, let me book some tickets right quick.
Yeah, I know. It's like, I think they said it's like about 100 bucks a day. Yeah. So we got to do that. One of my coworkers is going there, I think in June or July, she said. Oh. And I'm like, we need pictures, and I need to know what's going down there because, I mean, we're West Coast, so that's not too far. What I want out of it, besides just, you know, some of the selfish things, and it sounds terrible, but I mean, that keeps me producing, is to produce it, to have that product out there, right? But at the end of the day, like, I love seeing people enjoy it. You know, yeah. I have a lot of repeat fans. I have a lot of people that as soon as I put up a new Kickstarter, they are like first in line, and they're doing the original art tier. They want it all. They, you know, and those are the people, like, it's a little cliche, I get it, but I mean, those are the people that keep you doing it, right? Those fans, those people that when you do a show, they always come up to your table. Hey, what do you got? You got any new art? You got any new books? Or, you know, I bought this online. Can you sign it, type of stuff? I mean, that's what I want. I mean, I just want that feeling to continue. You know, I only do a handful of shows a year, just with time and money and everything like that. And I always am amazed at how many people really like my crappy art. Like, they really do.
Right. And that's the artist in you saying that, because like, yes, we all think it, oh, our art sucks. My writing's okay. You know, yeah, like, ah, it's not good. Nobody's buying it. But yeah, like, there's somebody out there that loves it. You know what I'm saying?
I think the mark of any good creator is that they tear themselves apart.
Yeah.
And I think I've come up with plenty of stories that I've excitedly told Matt, and that I would be like, look, check this out. This is what I think is really cool. But then at the end of the day, like, you still look at it like, I've used this analogy before, but there's a movie, and now I can't remember the name of it. It was a movie like in the early 2000s where the plot of it was their buddy had cancer, and so they were going to go to George Lucas's house and break in and get the first early copy of Phantom Menace so they could watch it before anybody else. And I can't remember the name of the movie, but anyway, so they go through all this stupidity, and then they sit down in the theater because they got preview night tickets instead. And they're all sitting there, and the very end of the movie is one of them turning to the other one and going, what if this sucks? And then it just cuts to black. And like, that's how I feel about writing stuff, is like, sometimes I'm just like, what if this sucks?
Yeah.
But then you do it anyway. And you just, every once in a while, somebody's like, man, that was really cool. And you're just like, hey, maybe I'm onto something here.
Maybe I'm not as bad as I think I am.
That's right.
Yeah, you're right. And you know, there's always room for improvement. And hopefully I'll never have that ego of, I need to charge this exuberant amount of money for writing or for artwork or whatever. You know, I have the stories that I want to tell, and that's what I'm doing, you know, and hopefully, you know, fans will enjoy it and people will like it and they'll come back for more, you know, and if the fan base grows, it grows. If it shrinks, it shrinks. I mean, that's just kind of, I do it because I want to tell my stories,
right,
to as many people that want to read them, you know, and I'm okay with that. If it's one person, I'm okay with that.
Yeah. My mom's gonna buy all of our books, so
that's all that matters.
That's all that matters, right. Even the ones she's not comfortable with, because she's just a little old Christian lady.
Yeah,
oof, so's my mom.
Yeah, but you know what? She read Welcome to Everville, where a bunch of kids get torn apart and stuff, and she was like, "Wow, that's a really intense panel." And my dad's just over there, like gritting his teeth, just like, "Oh no."
Yeah, yeah. That's an interesting thing when you start touching on like different subject matters, and you mentioned like, you know, religion thing, and I don't really touch on a lot of politics, religion in my books. I mean, there's religious figures in the books, and Ice Pick, you know, the Archangel Michael shows up at the end of the book in issue 4, and you know, he does some damage and takes care of business, but you know, that's really stems from me growing up in, you know, Catholic Christian home, you know, and reading about these characters in the Bible. So it's a part of me, you know, it's not something I actively do now, but you know, it's there's some great characters in the Bible. There's no doubt. I mean, there's some really interesting stories there. Mm-hmm. And for me, like, I like the supernatural stuff. So let's, you know, see what happens when you mix them up.
Yeah.
Kick it up to 11.
I mean, I'm a pastor's kid, and these days I'm just over here like, let's see how far I can go sacrilegiously before people are, you know,
before I start feeling hot
at the door. Yeah, before I start feeling here. Warm.
Ooh, but yeah, well, I will say there is definitely some craziness that goes on in issue one of Annabelle. I mean, there's we learn a lot. I mean, there's definitely like witchcraft and magic and dragons and fire. And I mean,
yeah, there
I
is
like that kind of stuff.
There you go. That's the pitch right there. Witchcraft and magic, dragons.
Yeah, I tend to say like hot women and dragons, but, you know, either way,
whatever works. It's that probably gets it sold better. Let's we're getting pretty close to an hour, so let's talk about Annabelle and, you know, tell everybody a bit about the campaign that you have coming up. This will air the next 2 weeks, which I think will be the last week in February and then the first week in March or something. I don't know. Okay. So at least your preview link should still be up.
Yeah, it'll be up. It's going to launch April 22nd. And this is going to be basically Traversing Deeper is the story kind of behind it. And this is about her story. Ice Pick issue 1-4 was kind of his story about everything that went on with him, how he became a superhero type of stuff. This is, you know, it kind of starts out with Annabelle going to visit her sister, and the unthinkable happens. She gets kidnapped, right? And you're like, okay. Picks up the day after issue 4 of Ice Pick. And we come to find out that there's this ancient Sumerian dragon named Kerr, and he has been bound to this cave by Annabelle's parents. And this was unbeknownst to Annabelle. Like, this, she's just kind of lived in this bubble, didn't know where her parents were. And we find out, really, without giving too much away, but we find out, like, I mentioned magic, like her parents were part of a coven and they were witches and things like that. And, you know, Kerr, based on the lore, like there's a lot of lore about this dragon where he would, you know, sacrifice virgins and women to power up and to live long lives. And, you know, that's typical lore stuff. And, you know, that inspired me to kind of write him as a main villain and just the whole backstory of her. And that's really what's kind of going down in issue one is she gets kidnapped. We find out really what's going on with her and her family, her parents. And then, you know, she kind of sees like this man is a dragon. He can transform into a dragon. And in the meantime, we kind of have like Ice Pick and Luke just kind of like, what the hell is going on? Like, she's not called or text. So they try to go in and save the day. Cause you know, men have to go in and save the damsel in distress, but you know, Annabelle has a way of kind of taking care of herself. And we see that kind of at the end of issue one. But yeah, it's going to be a 4-issue miniseries. It's a very stronger, like femme fatale type of book. It's very more focused on Annabelle, her powers, her story, where she came from, what her parents are, what she is, how did she get her powers, things like that. You know.
Nice. What's your favorite item in the campaign?
My favorite item. I did this campaign a little bit different. Normally I would have like a lot of the like fun, you know, like poker chips or lanyards or things like that. This one is really just structured about the covers. I have, you know, three cover artists kind of working on it. They're doing like a naughty nice type of version of a lot of the covers. So I'm curious. I've seen some of the covers, two of the three I've seen already, and they look great. I have a sketch cover. I like the original art because I get to like send out something that no one else is going to have. So I would say that's probably my favorite for all campaigns. I always like the original art stuff. I like doing it. I like how excited people are when they get it. They're like, oh, this is so amazing. And I love this piece. And oh, cool. You're the only one that has that. You know, I'm not going to use it.
I can erase this. Oh no. Why did I erase it?
Oh, for crystal board.
Oh, it was real art. Oh no.
But yeah, I'd probably say original art. I have original art and a sketch cover tier that I'm going to do as well. So I like doing sketch covers. They're fun.
Yeah, I keep telling Matt to do them.
Maybe one day.
You should just do them.
It's sketch covers. It's interesting. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
They're fun for you. And you can sell them.
Yeah.
Yeah, they are.
Here's a Batman sketch cover.
Yeah.
All these, here's a Wonder Woman.
Here's a Batman on a Captain America comic book. Scott Glover.
Got him.
No, he didn't. Gotham.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's weird how much sketch covers are so popular. I mean, it's just, it's ridiculous. Yeah.
You get a comic book and a piece of art.
That's right. That's crazy. Yeah. Well, all hearts and minds clear.
Clear.
All right. One last time. Todd, thank you for joining us. If you guys want to check out the preview link for the campaign, it'll be in the show notes, which I believe show up on every platform. I've never really looked on a bunch of them. I know they show up on Spotify and Apple Podcasts, though. So anyway, yeah, Todd, make sure you send me the preview link that I can post to the the actual podcast. If you've listened to the last 2 weeks, this was us with Todd. Again, we're getting closer to our 100th episode. Matt and I have only very lightly talked about what we're going to do for it, so we still have no idea.
I've already forgotten.
Yeah. So be looking forward to whatever shenanigans that's going to be. Beards and Comics is the podcast. Look it up on Facebook, and I think it'll just bring into Catalyst Comics on Facebook, though, which I don't even think I have access to anymore. You know what? Don't look us up on Facebook. What year is it? Jeez. No. Find us on Twitter.
What's a Facebook?
Find us on Twitter. It's a lot more toxic over there.
Twitter.
But yeah, so there's that. And then we have the code Beards and Comics. If you want some beard products, make sure you check that out. I think that's it for us. Yeah, right. That's all of our news. We don't really have anything going on.
Mm-mm.
We'll talk about it more on the 100th if that's what we do on the 100th. All right.
More comics and beards, man. More beards and comics. That's what we need.
Yeah. two times the beards, two times the comics.
Yeah. Yes.
All right, everybody. Thank you for listening to Beards Comics, and we'll see you next week with another guest that we haven't scheduled yet.
TBD.
Beards and Comics Podcast is a production of Catalyst Comics Studio. To get in touch with us, visit catalystcomicsstudio.com or search for Beards and Comics Podcast on Facebook. Hey, if you like what you hear, give us a 5-star review wherever you listen to your podcasts. It doesn't sound like much, but it helps a whole lot.